regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Going to be talking with Justin Davis from NRA's Institute for Legislative Action here in just a minute or two. Today is a big day for the anti-gunners in Rhode Island. The House Judiciary Committee holding a hearing, I believe, starts at 4 p.m. Eastern, taking on a number of bills that are, I mean, to say they're detrimental to our right to keep our arms is an understatement. The biggest one, House Bill 8073, this is a follow-up to the ban on the sale and manufacture and transfer of so-called assault weapons that was passed last year. And that was a big lift for the anti-gunners. There was a lot of discussion about whether that bill would actually have the juice to get through. You had the death of the state Senate president and then the jockeying for position among his replacements, one of whom relatively pro-gun, especially for a Democrat. And, you know, deals were made, arms were twisted, and that ban ended up getting through. Here we are just a year later, and the Democrats in the House are now trying to push a ban on the possession of so-called assault weapons. And, you know, again, when we hear this, every time a ban gets introduced that has a grandfather clause, right? Nobody needs these weapons of war. These guns don't belong in a civil society. But if you own them, you can keep them. I mean, why would we believe that that's the case? What's happening in Rhode Island today is exactly what the gun banners want. They don't want you to keep the most commonly owned rifle in the country. They want to force you to destroy it, to hand it over to law enforcement, to move it out of state until there are no more states to move these guns to. And if you don't do that, if you don't comply, are they going to go door to door? No, they're not. But if they catch you with one, what happens? Years behind bars. And their new excuse would be, well, nobody's coming for your guns. Okay, fine. Again, you're not going door to door right now, right? But you're still coming for me if I continue to own one of these guns and law enforcement finds out about it. You want to put me in prison, not because I robbed a liquor store, not because I hit somebody with my car and drove off, but because I'm keeping a hold of the gun that I lawfully purchased, a gun that I legally possessed, a gun that is in common use for lawful purposes, including self-defense. You want to put me in prison for possessing that firearm. That's what the gun banners want. They're making no secret about it in Rhode Island. And that, honestly, is just the tip of the iceberg. This is one of several truly atrocious attacks on the right to keep and bear arms that the House Judiciary Committee is going to be hearing today. And we talked about them all with Justin Davis from NRA's Institute for Legislative Action. Take a look and a listen. Justin, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to talk with you today.
It's great to be here.
And I wish the topic were better, but boy, Rhode Island has given Virginia a run for its money this year in terms of the worst legislation that we've seen. I think in Virginia, it's both quantity and, well, what's the opposite of quality, I guess. Rhode Island, though, these are some terrible bills, right? I mean, you've got a ban on so-called assault weapons that would force legal gun owners to destroy their guns, hand them over to police, move them out of state, but they could not keep possession unless they were willing to go to prison.
It's absolutely insane, Cam. I mean, to think just a year ago, they banned what they called a compromise piece of legislation that banned the sale of so-called assault weapons. And just a year later, they're going for the full ban on possession. And if you don't destroy your firearms, it's a 10-year sentence in jail. This is insane. I mean, it's not only is the bill insane, but the fact that it happened so quickly after a quote-unquote assault weapon sale ban just shows that it's never about policy. It's about politics. And every time you give an inch, or well, in this case, they gave a mile in the first part, they'll always come back for more. You can never appease the thirst for tyranny.
Absolutely. You know, and we saw this in Virginia. I mean, I've had people say, you know, nobody's coming for your guns. I listen. Maybe they're not going door to door, but you cannot tell me that if somebody says nobody needs these battlefield weapons of war, these guns don't belong in civil society, that they're going to be satisfied with saying, but you can keep the ones that you already have. That's absolutely ridiculous, you know? And so this is, I guess, from the gun controller's standpoint, a logical follow-up. But for those of us who support the Second Amendment, you know, this is pretty clearly their end game, right? They are out to eradicate our right to keep and bear arms, and this bill would go a long way towards doing that in Rhode Island.
It's absolutely insane. I mean, it's an affront to the Constitution. It's an affront to common Supreme Court decisions in Heller and Bruin. I mean, there's no way that anybody can look at these bills and say they're constitutional. And these gun grabbers, they know this, but they have the opportunity to use taxpayer-funded AGs to take these cases that they know will lose in court, while groups like the NRA and our partners in this fight have to fundraise, have to use member dollars. We don't have a blank check from taxpayers. We don't have a blank check from Michael Bloomberg. We have to get people in the fight. We have to take this to them and stay afloat. It costs millions of dollars to take these fights to the Supreme Court. And it's something we're got to do. It's something we're going to do.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, unfortunately, you know, I don't think that they do know they're going to lose in court. I mean, you look at Rhode Island when they banned magazines, they did the same thing, right? Existing owners can't have them anymore. There was a lawsuit, Ocean State Tactical versus Nerona, got all the way up to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court heard it in conference, I think, 15 different times, and then ultimately denied cert. And so that law is in effect in Rhode Island, which I think emboldens these gun grabbers, right? And this is one of the reasons why it's so important. The Supreme Court has five different hardware cases that it's holding on to right now. It's so critically important that the Supreme Court hear one of these cases, because every time they delay action, and Justice Kavanaugh said, you know, we'll likely hear a case in the next term or two, so that last term. But every time they delay one of these cases or deny cert to one of these cases, the gun control advocates just say, okay, good, we get to move forward then. And I don't think that this would have happened in Rhode Island had the Supreme Court taken this magazine ban case, you know, last term.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the root problem here, right, is that the Supreme Court has not taken decisive action and taken up one of these cases. And we continue to send them to the Supreme Court. It's way past the time that they step in and say, look, this is obviously unconstitutional. You can't do that. And for every day they don't hear one of these cases, the day that more and more American citizens, law-abiding citizens, have their rights stripped away. And of course, criminals don't care about these laws. They're going to continue to break laws and continue to own firearms that are banned in these states, because criminals, by definition, do not follow the law. So, you know, the issues in Rhode Island and these blue states are not from people like me and you. It's these centers of crime epidemics that you're seeing in places like Providence. I mean, that's what's plaguing the communities, not your average gun owner. And yeah, if you think the same people who are, you know, knocking over banks and robbing people on the street really care about a so-called assault weapons ban, I have a different story to tell you, because it's just not going to happen.
Absolutely. And, you know, the sad thing is, man, again, you talk about the punishment under this bill, 10 years in prison. There are people who are committing violent crimes in Providence who, you know, they don't get 10 years, right? They get offered a plea deal. They plea down to a lesser charge. They get maybe 2-3 years, maybe just nothing more than probation, right? Meanwhile, you know, individuals who are simply exercising their Second Amendment rights, keeping a gun that they lawfully purchased, legally possessed until the state said you can't have it, those are the people who are looking at, you know, spending 10 years of their life behind bars.
Absolutely. I mean, look what happened here in Fairfax. I mean, just a few weeks ago, you continue to see it, but just a few weeks ago, a lifetime career violent criminal for no reason stabbed and killed a mother at a bus stop. And that person had 30 plus charges against them that the justice system and the liberals DAs here in Fairfax County decided wasn't a big deal. Well, it's going to appease these people's behavior. They're not going to be reformed. They're not going to be taken off the street. They don't wake up one day and say, you know, I'm going to be a lawful citizen today. And that's why it's so important for people like me and you and your listeners to always be ready to protect not only themselves, but their family and their communities from these dangerous individuals that have been allowed to roam the streets across our country.
Absolutely. So the Rhode Island bill is House Bill 8073. There is a hearing today, right?
Correct. Yep. We have a slew of hearings today, and it's not just the possession ban. There's requirements for having $1 million in liability insurance. There's background checks on ammunition. I mean, it's everything that Michael Bloomberg would ever want in a state is up for discussion in Rhode Island today.
You know, and I said on yesterday's program that, you know, maybe these bills get watered down. I when I said that, I had forgotten that Rhode Island already passed a ban on so-called assault. And so I don't know that House Bill 8073 can get watered down. I mean, not that even a watered down version would be acceptable to gun owners, but, you know, what are they going to do to modify this? You know, okay, it's 5 years behind bars instead of 10, right? I mean, there's no way that they can make this acceptable. And if this bill and some of the others that you mentioned pass, again, $1 million liability insurance, ammunition background checks, we know what a boondoggle that's been out in California. You know, it's a small state, but boy, they're taking a big bite out of our right to keep and bear arms.
Well, it's a good lesson for everybody. And I hope the folks who are listening, who are voting in Rhode Island, whether in the state house or just gun owners in Rhode Island, are realizing is that I'd never give an inch to these people. They will always come back for more. And so do not compromise on your rights. Stand strong. And if they do pass this legislation, make sure you're ready to take them to court. And that's what we're ready to do.
Absolutely. I'm guessing that NRA will be in the room during today's hearing.
We have a great team of lobbyists across the country, and we have a fantastic lobbyist in Rhode Island. He's one of our most seasoned, best people there. We have full faith in him to fight for your rights. So, and if you're not, you know, if you're in the area, make sure you go down and have your voice heard, whether it's making a phone call, writing an email, go to NRAILA.org. There's a great way to take action there through our alert system. Make sure you're making your voice heard. I was a lobbyist. I can tell you, I've talked to folks, especially in state houses, especially these tight purple districts, that care deeply. If they get dozens of responses saying, please don't vote for this. This is my story. Tell that personal story. For years, we've been beaten back because the left has told these emotional stories when we've relied on facts. Now, you would think facts would be the most important part of this decision, but for a lot of politicians, they need that emotional story. They need that emotional plea. Tell your story. Make an impact. Get involved today.
Absolutely. Justin, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for everything you do. And look forward to talking to you again very soon. Maybe an update on Rhode Island, Virginia. And we've got the NRA annual meetings coming up in just a couple of weeks as well.
Yeah, we'll be heading down to Houston. It's going to be a great time. And I'd love to come on the show anytime. I've always been a big fan. It's an honor to be with you here. And keep up the great work, Cam. You're doing amazing stuff.
Well, I appreciate that. And keep up everything you're doing there at NRA. Justin Davis joining us here on NRA, on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company.
Thanks, sir.
And thanks to Justin for joining us on the program. And, you know, he mentioned the Rhode Island gun owners. They have been absolutely fantastic. There is such a great 2A community in Rhode Island, you know, Rhode Island Firearms Coalition and other groups. Man, they're out of the state capitol. I know they're going to be at that hearing. I know this. And again, this hearing starts at 4 o'clock this afternoon. They got multiple bills. This is going to run into the evening, could run late into the night, depending on how much testimony the Democrats on that committee allow. And, you know, we've seen again in state houses across the country, from Minnesota to New Mexico to Virginia, efforts to stifle the voices of gun owners. That may very well happen in Rhode Island tonight. But I know that there is going to be a huge presence from the Second Amendment community in Rhode Island. So I just want to give a shout out to those folks who will be in attendance, who are showing up. They're making those phone calls. They're sending those emails. I know that it feels like you guys are sometimes run up against a brick wall, but I got to tell you, from one embattled state to another, I certainly do appreciate everything that you're doing and all of those efforts to safeguard our Second Amendment rights. All right, let's talk about a couple of other things here, including today's armed citizen story. But first, let's get to our recidivist report. And, you know, I mean, again, it's something we were talking about with Justin, right? You've got these laws. You possess something. Possess something that, by the way, is protected by the Constitution. We're going to put you in prison for 10 years. Meanwhile, violent criminals are getting off with nothing more than probation in many places, including, by the way, in Memphis, Tennessee, where lawmakers, Justin Pearson, I believe the name is, right? He's the Tennessee legislator who led the protest for more gun control on the floor of the Tennessee State House. He was expelled from the legislature. He got reelected. Now he's running for Congress. He's trying to primary Steve Cohen. He demands all these gun control laws. That's his answer to violent crime. Going after the law-abiding citizen, putting more possessory offenses on the books. Well, what's happening in Memphis, Tennessee? A watchdog group says many criminal convictions get no prison time. And those criminal offenses, by the way, include many violent crimes. This is from WREG in Memphis. They highlight one particular case. July 2nd, 2024. At least six shots were fired after a guy walked up to a group sitting outside an apartment complex and opened fire. Four people managed to dodge the bullets, so it doesn't look like anybody was injured, but a guy named Cameron Wheeler was arrested, and he was charged. But before his case went to trial, he ended up pleading guilty to just two of the seven charges: attempted second-degree murder and convicted felon in possession of a firearm. Both of those, by the way, are crimes that are punishable by time in prison. But Cameron Wheeler didn't get prison. Instead, he got an 8-year suspended sentence, which means as long as he doesn't get arrested and convicted of any other crimes between now and that 8-year expiration date, he can stay out of prison. A woman named Leslie Taylor said that our court watchers were reporting that they were hearing a lot of suspended sentences like Wheeler. She's the executive director of a group called Memphis Crime Beat, which WREG describes as a group working to reduce crime by better understanding the criminal justice system. I love this. I love this. According to the TV station, this group deploys volunteers to sit and watch what's happening in criminal court and gather and analyze available data. Again, I love this. Taylor says that the group began investigating all of the cases that were resolved in criminal court last December. It's just sort of a snapshot, right? Let's just go in every day in December. Because, I mean, the volunteers, they've got lives. It's hard for them to do this on a full-time basis. But they did that for a month. And what they found is that in December of 2025, 47% of the convictions in Shelby County Criminal Court resulted in a suspended sentence or a diversion. So these are individuals, again, who are eligible for prison. Even under their plea bargain, they were eligible for prison sentences. They didn't get one. That includes, by the way, Taylor said that of those cases that resulted in a suspended sentence, 25% involved a violent charge, like a shooting, a robbery, or carjacking. So 47% of all the cases that were resolved in the criminal court in December resulted in probation or diversion. And a quarter of those cases were for violent offenses. Now, again, that doesn't count the deals where a 10-year sentence goes down to 2 years, right? Or a 20-year sentence goes down to 5 years. They didn't even talk about those cases. These are only the cases where the individuals were eligible for a prison sentence and didn't get a day behind bars. WREG says Shelby County District Attorney Steve Malroy has touted that 75% of cases sentenced to probation last year came with what he called meaningful supervision. Sure. The TV station says that some of the imposed conditions are things like job training, getting a GED, rehabilitation, calling this a key strategy to reduce recidivism. And look, there's something to that idea. If you offer people a way out, some of them are going to take it. And some of them are going to be able to turn their lives around. But you know what? You can offer job training. You can offer educational services. You can offer rehabilitation. Behind bars, too. All of those programs are available, or should be available, in the correctional system. They don't have to be sentenced probation to get them. Now, WREG asked specifically, okay, well, what about this guy Cameron Wheeler? What were the terms of his probation? What hoops does he have to jump through? What steps does he have to take? And they didn't hear back from the DA. Huh. Imagine that. They did speak with Memphis Shelby Crime Commission President Bill Gibbons. He said aggravated assaults make up about 80% of all reported violent crimes in our community. And he says we can't really make a serious dent in a violent crime rate without reducing the number of aggravated assaults. He says right now under our state law, an individual can walk through a neighborhood or through a parking lot, firing a gun at somebody, be charged with aggravated assault, be convicted, and get probation. In the case of Cameron Wheeler, this was not his first rodeo. So a couple of years before he walked up to that group of people at an apartment complex and opened fire, missing all of them, thankfully, he was involved in a carjacking back in 2019. Gwendolyn Turner was the victim in this case. She was dragged about 100 yards outside of her home. And Wheeler was one of the carjackers. He was convicted. He was sentenced to 3 years. So when he, again, is convicted for being a felon in possession of a firearm, it wasn't some nonviolent drug offense, right? It wasn't that, you know, it was some ticky-tack little felony that did not involve harming others. No, no, this was a violent felony that he was convicted of. He got 3 years in prison. Not long, but it was at least some prison. And then a few years later, again, he's back in court, charged with shooting at a group of people. And this time, he walks away after pleading guilty to attempted second-degree murder and a felon in possession of a firearm. And the DA still gives him nothing more than probation, a diversionary sentence. Leslie Taylor, the head of that group that sends people to court and you know, to watch the outcomes of these cases, she says, we were surprised when we investigated the criminal history of these defendants and found out that so many of them had previous convictions. 41% of the defendants who got a suspended sentence had prior convictions. WREG says Taylor's group, Gibbons' group, are both advocating for changes. There is a bill in Tennessee right now that would create a presumption of incarceration rather than probation when somebody is convicted of aggravated assault. I got to say, I haven't looked at this legislation closely. It seems like something I'm in favor of. Again, when you look at the stats right now in Shelby County, and again, where are the Democrats talking about this? Where's Justin Pearson talking about this? He's not talking about getting tough on violent offenders. He's not talking about the problem in the criminal justice system that allows repeat violent felons to escape justice. No. He's talking about, well, we need national universal background checks. We need a national ban on so-called assaults. We need to put people in prison for possessing a firearm, not for shooting somebody, just for keeping a gun, like in Rhode Island, keeping a gun that they lawfully own today. It is infuriating. It is outrageous. By the way, the total number of cases in Shelby County District Court in December, 514 felony cases. 144 of those null prost, which basically means prosecution says we're not going to proceed with the case. So we'll keep the charges open. We might go back in the future, but we're not actively pursuing these cases. So they're just shoved aside, right? Of the 370 cases that remain, 178 defendants got a combination of suspended sentence and probation or straight probation. 84 received prison time. So in Shelby County, you are twice as likely, if you're charged with a felony, you are twice as likely to get diversion and probation, or just probation, than you are to be sentenced to any time at all behind bars. That's amazing. 63% received diversion only, which means that their cases were diverted. This is basically probation for first-time offenders. 45 were released after being sentenced to time served. That's staggering to me. 370 felony cases, Well, 514 felony cases. 84 defendants getting any prison time at all in Shelby County. And again, I don't think Memphis is an outlier here. I think Memphis is fairly representative of what we see in cities across the country. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story. From California, where a coroner has identified the 47-year-old suspected burglar who was shot and killed by a homeowner in Tehachapi. I apologize if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. The intruder identified as a guy named Jason Gerard Velasquez, who investigators say forced his way into a home in Tehachapi. Homeowner is cooperating with the detectives. This was April 2nd, I guess, when Velasquez allegedly intruded in that home, forcing his way inside before the homeowner shot him. Deputies have not made any arrests in California. You do have a right to protect yourself. And it sounds like at this point, that is exactly what happened. A justifiable use of force that resulted in the death of a would-be intruder. Don't know, again, whether Velasquez knew the homeowner, whether this was a random encounter. Don't have those details. Hopefully we'll get that information at some point. But again, here we are nearly a week after the shooting. No arrests have been made. And at this point, investigators are treating this like an act of self-defense. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A 11-year-old girl and a woman from Urbandale, Iowa, who have been honored for helping to save a child who was drowning. And I love to see, these heroes get official recognition. Maya Cannon is the 11-year-old. Her aunt, Alexis Newton, both honored yesterday evening by the city of Urbandale, Iowa, during the Urbandale City Council meeting. The pair stepped up at a local pool. Maya was actually the first to notice something had gone wrong. She said, "I saw something under the water," and she realized it was a little boy. She said he had purple lips. He was really pale. So Maya immediately started yelling, to anybody within earshot that there was a child who needed help. And that's when Alexis Newton stepped in, pulled the child from the water. She said it happened so fast, but it felt like forever at the same time. She said, "I didn't really have time to process what was going on until later that night." So after Newton got the little boy out of the pool, I guess there was an employee, I don't know if it was a lifeguard, but somebody there employed by the pool started CPR. Somebody else called 911. And thankfully, this little boy drew a breath. The following day, the child's family confirmed that he was recovering, that he was back to normal. He was going to be okay. They reached out to Alexis Newton and her niece. Alexis said that they've told me multiple times how grateful they are. Things could have been so different. And absolutely, they could have been. You know, we talk about on this program, people who step up and they perform CPR. If you don't know CPR, though, it doesn't mean that you're helpless in these situations, right? I mean, this 11-year-old girl did what she could do, which was to tell adults, "Hey, there's a kid who needs help," right? I don't know if Alexis Newton knows CPR. I don't think she does. Doesn't sound like she does. Maybe she does now. But she did what she could do, right? Which was pull that kid up out of the water. Thankfully, there was another individual there who did know CPR. There was an individual who whipped out their phone, called 911. You know, these acts of heroism don't necessarily involve running into a burning building. It really can be as simple as using your phone. It can be as simple as reaching into the water and pulling up a kid who's drowning and letting somebody else take over from there. But in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for that child in need. Maya Cannon, Alexis Newton, we thank you, as well as everybody else who stepped up to save that boy. We thank you for your very, very good deeds. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company, and I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. We're going to be talking with Amy Bellantoni, New York firearms attorney, about some of the history that she's discovered, right? Again, when we're talking about Second Amendment challenges, if the Second Amendment is implicated, right, then it is up to the state or the federal government, whatever body has put this gun law in place. It's up to that body to show that there is a historic tradition of, if not the exact same regulation, at least regulations with the same objective in mind. And one of the things that we've seen in the Second Circuit and the Seventh Circuit are these very expansive decisions by judges when it comes to gun-free zones, right? Well, I mean, if there was a law that prevented firearms from being carried at a school, for example, well, that justifies a modern day law that bans firearms from anywhere where a child might be present, like a playground, or a park, or a subway car, or a museum. I mean, it's absurd. And it is one of the ways that the courts have tried to get around Bruin. What's interesting, though, is that we were talking with Amy Bellantoni last week, and she said, I don't even think there's a tradition of banning guns in schools. For students, maybe, but not a total ban. Not for adults, who in some cases were expected to have firearms, to be able to protect the students under their care. This, I think, is really important research, again, particularly given some of the absurd rulings that we have seen from courts around the country, and not just on gun-free zones, right? I mean, we had the First Circuit on Friday uphold Maine's waiting period law, despite the fact that there weren't waiting periods back in 1791. Or in 1868, there were no attempts to have a cooling off period, forcing gun buyers to arbitrarily wait an X number of days before they could take possession of their purchases. Right now, in that case, the First District panel said, well, sure, but acquiring a gun isn't protected by the Second Amendment. Keeping a gun, sure. Carrying a gun, okay. But acquiring a gun, I mean, it's not in the Second Amendment. Yet another game that the courts are playing with our right to keep and bear arms. That particular case, I suspect that we do have now a circuit court split on the issue, which may make this more likely for the Supreme Court to take up next session. Who knows if they will? Maybe they'll just hang on to it forever, and or at least all term, and then bloop, dismiss a challenge. I mean, we've seen that with Snope, right? But the history that Second Amendment advocates are uncovering about what gun regulations were in place at the time of the founding, at the time the 14th Amendment was ratified, what those regulations looked like, why they were adopted, who they typically applied to. All of this is very, very important research that, is going to have a huge impact on the legal arguments that are made going forward. And I'm really looking forward, just as a history nut, I'm looking forward to talking about this with Amy on tomorrow's program. But again, from a Second Amendment perspective, I think the research that she and others are doing is critically important to not only defending our right to keep our arms, but to expanding it, to strengthening it. Around the country as well. So looking forward to that. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We are keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from across the nation, including the retirement of Roger St. Benitez in California. Oh, breaks my heart that he's not going to be on the bench anymore. I wish him well in his retirement, but we are taking a look back at some of his cases at Bearing Arms. Look at New Jersey's carry data and much more. So check it out at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, also become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT. Take 60% off your membership. If you're a VIP Gold and Platinum member, one of the bennies you get to take part in are our weekly live chats. Wednesdays, 1:30 Eastern with Hot Airs, Ed Morris, and myself. Would love for you to be a part of that next week. And again, just go to BarionArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT and take 60% off your membership. Have a great rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.